This is Ansel Doing It podcast. We're two queer Latinx besties navigating academia and trying to stay sane in the process. We talk about identity, relationships, astrology, and mental health.
Join us as we figure out how to stay on top of our lives, our horoscopes, and our own self-work in these borderlands.
Whenever you're ready, friend.
Ready.
Hi.
Hello, friend.
Hello. How are you, friend?
Oh my God, it's been a while. It's been a whole other lifetime.
It's been so long we had to look it up. We didn't remember anything.
We really thought last year we released something last year. I really thought it had only been 6 months since we last recorded.
Wow, that must be the ADHD.
Something. ADHD, COVID, trauma, life. Yes. You know.
Temporal, what is it when, like, if out of sight, out of mind?
Object permanence?
Yes, we had object impermanence with this podcast.
Yeah.
We put it on the shelf and forgot it was there. I'm sorry, y'all. So sorry.
Excuse me. Yeah, no, it is been a while, but here we are yet again, doing our comeback for the fifth time, if not more.
And this was the charm. This is it, y'all.
Yeah, we got to just, you know, keep everybody on their toes. Or maybe everybody's left already and isn't waiting around anymore.
And you know what? I respect that too. I wouldn't. But, you know, like my therapist tells me, you know, every attempt is valid. And we keep on trying and we keep on doing what we love and doing what we feel good doing. I mean, I was telling Jack, like, it's just two old friends catching up, and that's okay with me.
Yeah. So that's what we're doing today. I guess I'm like, should we reintroduce ourselves? I'm like,
yeah.
Who's still here? Who's listening? Who's like.
We can. I mean, I also feel like our introductions are different now because so much has gone on. Titles have changed. Ages have definitely changed. Time waits for no one. So yeah, we can start. Do you want to start us off, Jack, or do you want me to go first?
Sure, you can start. Let's see. No, I actually would like you to go first.
Okay. I was going to tell you. I was going to tell you what would be on your PowerPoint slide, but you've been on many PowerPoint slides recently. So. I'm Angelica. I use she, her pronouns. I am from LA, but born in Mexico. I don't know how far back I'm supposed to go, but here we are.
Tell us your life story.
Yes, that will only take like 5 minutes.
I was born on a rancho.
I was born in like a rancho that was becoming a city. By the time I was an adult, it became a full on city. So, you know, it was interesting, but I'm from Jalisco, very proud to be from San Juan de los Lagos. I draw a lot of, my identity from there. And the older I get, the more I kind of see like the influence of that in my life and in my personality. I'm a rancho girl. Let's see. I migrated to the U.S. when I was 10, and we thankfully landed in L.A. My mom was considering Chicago. Thank God. I'm not built for the winter out there. So, you know, like L.A. was home for a long time, and I stayed very local for undergrad and grad, and I did Chicano studies and film. I think film was just something that I really loved being in LA, and like, you know, the movies taught me English, so I thought I would pay back. But overall, like, it was just really nice. I was one of the overachieving kind of like studious girls that always get, you know, the nerdy label. So I was a nerd for a long time. There's a lot of lore to my nerddom I found, you know, from Yu-Gi-Oh card champion all the way to like knowing way too much about a little bit of everything. But I met Jack in grad school. So I somehow applied to PhD programs when I was very young. I was like 20. Yeah. I was like, I was 20. What the fuck? I had no business applying.
Your frontal cortex wasn't even fully developed. Like, you were not a fully developed human yet.
No, which is why I always tell people now, take a gap year, develop your frontal cortex, go travel, do whatever you need to do. Really think about this. It's a big decision. I didn't think about it. And here I am, full of mistakes. But I got to the PhD program at UCLA in Chicano Studies, and I was very excited. And that's where Jack and I initially met at orientation. Immediately clicked, I feel. I don't know. Like, we both were from LA and we're kind of hood rats, so we we really connected. And so
you're the nerdy hood rat. And
yes, I think I was the the hood rat that took notes. You know, I was the hood rat that had a curfew, like that kind of hood rat. And I was from South LA, Southeast LA, or technically Southwest. We're on the border there. But grad school was really fun, thanks to Jack, and such a beautiful, painful experience.
I was like, really? Was it so fun?
It's fun now because I only remember the good stuff because I've covered up all the other stuff in order to survive. But
we only talk about that in therapy now.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, like anything you do for a long time, it's going to have its ups and downs. It's not going to all be fucking rainbows and butterflies. So it was a lot, but I had people like Jack in my life at that time, and it was really great to at least get to share some of the hardships with him. And yeah, we went through a lot. We stayed friends throughout, and now it's been a few years since our PhD, and you know, we're both like kind of doing our own thing. Jack's a professor, and I am cosplaying as a curator here in DC. I did a postdoc and I really loved it, and I love teaching. I think that's the PhD taught me that teaching's great. I love being able to be in a classroom, but I learned as an artist part-time in grad school. You know, I always loved art, and I did, you know, art on the side, that that's really what I wanted to do. I just never really felt brave enough to say it out loud. And so the opportunity came to be in DC for a research position at the National Gallery, and then a fellowship opened up in curatorial work. So now I get to, you know, dedicate my days to putting art on walls, which is great. And some people might see it, and that's great. But mostly I get to support artists that I really care about, and I get to tell stories with the work that's on the wall. So that's what I'm currently doing out in the middle of the East Coast, sort of. And I miss California a lot, and I miss LA a lot. I'm the only one not out here, I think, in my family. Nobody will venture, not even to Chicago, like I mentioned. So that's my very long introduction, but I hope it gives you all a good idea of what you're dealing with.
Yeah, no, that was great. So for any new listeners, returning listeners, I'm Jack Caraves, pronouns he, him, they, them, él, ella, nah, just él.
Que perro, que perro. Él.
Let's see. I was born and raised in LA, in Hollywood, grew up in between Hollywood and K-Town. Then when I was in high school, we got Section 8 and my mom moved us out of Hollywood and to the hood in Santa Monica.
Is that above 20th Street or where is that?
Everything that's right before, I mean, that's right around Santa Monica College. Actually, not everything, but everything.
Ocean Park area?
No, Ocean Park's the nice part. So I'm everything kidding. Like near Pico between like 30th and 11th to the west? I don't know. Anyway, there is a historically like, you know, POC community, lower income, low income area in Santa Monica. Santa Monica that people don't like ever know about because that's the way that the West Side likes to keep it and is trying to, you know, push people out of there. Anyway, so yeah, born and raised in LA. Parents are from Mexico, grew up mostly with my Yucateco side, but also have a side from Michoacan that's a little bit more estranged. But yeah, let's see, what else? You did yours really flawlessly. Now I'm just...
Oh, thank you.
What should I share about myself? I am so queer. I've been most letters in the queer alphabet soup. And so this is what I always tell
myself. That is not what I thought you'd say.
Yeah, I was a lesbian once, a gay for the majority of it. Bi, most of that's how I first came out as bi in high school. Yeah, and then, you know, came out as trans just a couple years ago, actually through the podcast, right? Like during the podcast was going through that transition. So I love
that. Yeah, we changed up the logo a lot because I'm just kidding.
I know, you had to draw in little pelitos every now and then.
I love it. It was great.
To kind of do the, you know, affirm my gender as I'm changing.
Happy to use my art to affirm you, always.
Yes, no, always appreciated. yeah, and yeah, met Angelica in grad school back in 2012 when we were starting the grad school journey, the crazy grad school journey. So it's really wild that like we're here now, kind of like, for me, it's been what, like almost six years since I graduated from grad school. I can't do math, but
same. We're not that kind of doctor anyway.
No, I'm just gonna guesstimate that it's been about 5 years.
I mean, you know,
a lot of changes in the last couple of years, and I think that's why, you know, when we first started the podcast, we were really consistent starting as grad students or starting the podcast kind of like in our later years of grad school. And then once we both graduated, kind of navigating the kind of, you know, unstable terrain of post PhD life, as if PhD life was not unstable enough emotionally, financially, and otherwise.
We didn't know it was part one. We didn't know. I thought it was it. I was like, oh, after this, like we have a job, right? We don't have to worry about instability. Not true.
Yeah. So, you know, it's been a couple of years of lots of transitions. We've moved to different cities outside of LA. Angelica's hopped around the country. I've mostly just hopped around California.
Oh my God.
One year I was in Urbana-Champaign.
Yeah, you've skipped. You've hopped around.
I did leave the motherland of California.
You did. Yeah, you're so brave.
Yeah, I am. But then, you know, I know that I will never leave permanently.
Understood.
Unless it's to another country. Which I guess all the other states feel like that. But yeah, unless it's like to Mexico or somewhere else. But yeah.
Love it.
Now I'm back in SoCal teaching in gender and sexuality studies at UC Riverside, which has been like very new, but has been pretty pretty awesome. Doing our best to, like, we've been wanting to come back to the podcast and, you know, but since this is really just us, you know, this is our labor of love. There's
truly,
there's not a lot of, you know, it's easier to not show up since we're not getting paid for it.
Can we, like, okay, let's park the car here a little bit, because I think that's important to clarify, right? That we started this podcast when there were very few Latinx identified podcasts at the time. Mm-hmm. And then I think about it this way, like a little boom happened, and then there were tons of them popping up, you know, along with the podcast boom of like the early 2010s. Or mid to late 2010s. And then we were, you know, gaining some traction with the podcast. We've had incredible opportunities to speak to like many universities, classrooms, conferences. We've been flued out multiple times. Mm-hmm. And that was great. And I love that experience, those experiences. But I think, you know, as some podcasts started to professionalize and get the studios and get, you know, better equipment and start to like incorporate video into what they offer, I didn't feel left behind at all. We were so busy with like our careers that, you know,
we were professionalizing outside of the
podcast. Yeah. because, you know, like I'm sure many podcasters can relate to this. We had a day job and we had to take care of that and get rent paid, and we had to eat. The job market is really hard after the PhD. Even in grad school, it was hard. So, like, you know, we let this go because this was, you know, one of the things that we did out of passion and love, but not something that we needed to prioritize in that moment. I think that's just the real, real. I'm okay with remaining indie and remaining ourselves this whole time because it sort of made it, it's kept the authenticness of like Jack and I's relationship pretty intact, you know, like there's no sponsors, although we would never deny you. but like, you know, there's nobody that we really have to answer to except each other. And I really love that. And we've remained friends outside of these podcast conversations because we genuinely like each other as people.
Right.
So like the fact that the mic is on is great. We love letting you in on some of this friendship. But, you know, over the years, it's everything has changed around us and we've stayed, I would say, relatively the same as far as the podcast looks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that, you know, looking back, I don't regret any of it. But I do understand that, like, there's a lot of competition now and there's a lot of other things on the market. And that's great. You know,
I mean, everybody has a podcast today.
I love it. You know, if you all ever wonder what we think about it, I think it's great.
Yeah.
There's room for all of us.
It's such an it can be a very accessible way to engage in kind of, you know, conversations, sharing knowledge, right? And now it's just like, yeah, when we, like you said, when we were first kind of thinking about this and put out our first episode, I think in like 2017, 2016, it was just like, podcasting was starting to really be a thing. And then even amongst like peers or people that we knew, like people were starting, it was almost like, oh, you don't have to have money or be a professional podcaster to have a podcast, right? Like anybody can do a podcast. Like, and now, right? Like I know when you were teaching or now that I'm teaching, right? Like I have my students do podcasts, right? Like that's the assignment that people often assign now, right? Because it's just a much more accessible way, right, than writing or publishing to kind of like have these kinds of conversations that we want to have. And so like, I think kind of this also kind of is a good segue to kind of think about reintroduce not just ourselves, but the name of the podcast and like,
sure.
And like why we have named this podcast Until Doing It. In terms of, you know, honoring Gloria Antaldúa, we'll talk about Antaldúa here and there, but it's maybe like less of what the podcast.
Yeah.
Well, you know, not that. I mean, we're taking from her and running with it, right? Like in terms of like the podcast being very much about talking about what queerness is or what our different identities are mm-hmm. the different parts of identities that make us who we are, but also how we navigate the world and kind of crossing different borders, right, as she talks about. But yeah, I know we each have like a relationship to Ansaldúa and her work. Yeah, I just kind of wanted to kind of also reintroduce her into yeah. the space and into this conversation. You know, Gloria Ansaldúa is a Chicana queer feminist writer, poet, educator, scholar. What else?
Editor.
Artist.
Yeah, just overall badass.
Who from badass the border. Libra, who passed away yeah. in 2004 from mm-hmm. Diabetes complications. And so, at least for me, right, like so much of she really was my introduction to feminism. Or one of my early introductions to like feminism in undergrad, and not just feminism, mm-hmm. but intersectional feminism, right? So, of course, Angelica and I being nerds in grad school, right?
Yes. We totally connected on not just our love of Ansaldúa, but I think connected on using her frameworks and ideas to conceptualize who we were. You know, I think that now more than ever, reading is important. And
reading is fundamental.
Fundamental. And, you know, when we were young, at least I can only speak for myself, like Ansaldúa was really hard to not grasp, but it was a lot. It was heavy. You know, she talks about the border being an open wound, where the first world grates against the first and bleeds. Now that sentence alone, you know, can really irritate people who feel the border needs to be policed. It could really irritate people who have never thought of the border as a living thing. Mm-hmm. But for me, as an immigrant who crossed that border very young to come to this side of the continent for opportunity, it was really important to see somebody else talking about it in that way. So yeah, like when Jack and I met, we were very young, but we already had lived through some of the experiences that many don't even have to think about, right? Like I have a mixed status family, for example. I was undocumented for a long time, and all those experiences, Ansaldúa kind of put words to that, you know, and said, hey, I'm somebody who also witnesses this harm done to communities along the border, understands that creativity can also thrive there. You know, she wrote poetry out of pain that she suffered through being all these different identities at once. And so, yeah, like I think that's how doing it, as Jack coined, like it's such a wonderful way to describe what it means to just swim in really muddy waters and figure out and navigate things as a nuanced, complicated being. And she always left room for that. I think that's what I love about Ansaldúa, is that, you know, she was embracing the word queer at a time when many of her fellow alphabet soupians did not. She was open and she was very fluid. So I appreciated her. And as I've gotten older, I've come to understand how hard it must have been to exist in the world as she was. And so I'm just grateful for her, and that her language has been, you know, good for us to think about and to use for the podcast, right? Because we're framing it differently. And so doing it means like code switching. It means just figuring it out and being okay with not knowing.
I'm like, damn, I've been talking about not knowing or being uncertain in therapy for so long right now, because it's stressing me out. But yeah,
keep them in business.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, just that's the other thing too, right? About like, I think one of my favorite articles or chapters that I've read from Gloria Anzaldúa was, I think it's in the book that she edited, this Bridge We Call Home. Is that what it's called?
The second, yeah.
In that anthology, she published Now Let Us Shift on the Path Towards Conocimiento, where she talks about, right, this path of what she's calling conocimiento, or like consciousness, right? Like consciousness raising, or like coming into consciousness, and the seven different steps that lead you to consciousness that are, don't exist on a linear kind of path, right? But it's time is she's not thinking about time in a linear way, or like healing or processing in a linear way, but these different kind of paths that take us towards consciousness, higher consciousness, but also towards healing, right? And one of the main things she talked about in that article is also like spiritual activism, right? That's one of the paths, I believe, or one of the points on this journey, right? And so much of spiritual activism and the way she's talking about it is how, or the importance of doing the internal work, right? Doing inner work, and how inner work really contributes to, or pushes us towards, engaging in public acts. And it's when we do that inner work that allows us to do these public acts of activism, right? That, and it's, she's defining it broadly, right? Not just in terms of activism and the ways we think about it, of like, you know, being at the picket line, or being, or talking, like reaching out to your congressman, like not that kind of activism, but activism that is rooted, right, in resistance, and can be something that even like writing, dancing, movement, you know, pushing back in whatever way, using your voice, right? And so I think that idea too, right, of spiritual activism that Anzaldúa coined back, I think in 2002 at least is when I cited it. like that also speaks to the work that we do, right? This so much of what this podcast has allowed us to do is to do that inner work, not just like individually, but to process it together, to process it in community, with our listeners. And then it becomes this public act, right, of healing and activism, and kind of having these conversations that, at least in our communities, maybe are now starting to be had more. But at the time when we started, right, there were not a lot of spaces that were talking about, you know, what does it mean to be queer and Latinx, and to be first gen, and to be navigating higher ed, not just at the undergraduate, but the graduate level. Now, for me at the professoriate, for again, Angelica, who's at the National Gallery, right? We're in these really, really elite kind of like spaces where, you know, again, they were not made for us or created for us. So how do we really honor, you know, our ancestors and our lineage and ourselves, and like, you know, resist these kind of temptations to doubt ourselves, to kind of like make ourselves small, and instead take up space in these places. I've been reading a lot. Can you tell?
But it's great to hear like how, you know, and that's what I love about this podcast, and what the feedback we've gotten from listeners over the years has been, is that like we're taking these very like nerdy things from the classroom that you and I were experiencing in grad school and are still experiencing, you know, and bringing them to the podcast, which like this is a way to make education accessible. Like not everybody can sit in on Professor Caraves's gender study seminars, so we get him for a little bit here. You know, not everybody knows about art history the way that I might, but I'm happy to share that here, you know. And all these things we bring to the podcast are part of, like, we're not leaving that at the door, you know. And I think that that's such a, it's a service to the community we've built around the podcast, that we can be fully ourselves. And that's, we can't say that a lot of the time about our workplace, you know, where the places that we do this work in. Like sometimes you unfortunately have to make other parts of yourself a little bit different to survive.
Or or yeah. hide them or
yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, maybe because I'm a little bit older now, but I spent a lot of my 20s, especially my early 20s, being so concerned and self-centered and afraid of liking the things that I liked, you know? Of course, comes from deep shame, trauma, sure, but also having been bullied for the things I like. I do want to be real. I have been bullied.
I don't, yeah, I, you really have been bullied. And yeah,
I'm not just using that as a figure of speech.
I mean, I won't go into detail, but yeah, Anisha and I were, Anisha is my partner for folks who don't know. But
get used to it, you'll hear Anisha, a lot.
Anisha and I were talking about, I don't know why you came up in what we, I don't even know what we were talking about last night, but we were talking about, you came up and we were talking about grad school and we were talking about just reflecting on like, wow, like Angelica was really bullied in so many ways and like by different people, like people in power, by your peers, or like not like a couple, like I'm thinking of very specific people.
Yeah, this was a pyramid scheme, you know, multiple levels.
Yeah. Yeah. And there were so many things that were happening, right? And ruptures happen in that, in for you, right? In the first year, then in the second year by that horrible professor, and then and then other people, and then you were being like shamed for doing art and like shamed by people in Chicano studies.
That's Chicano
studies. You know, an interdisciplinary program
rooted
in community and revolution and art. It's self-determination, but yet you, and not just you, right, but many people at that time were being shamed and quieted and made to feel and experience a lot of trauma, right, for just being yourselves and coming into this program or into this intellectual project.
Sure, right? Yeah.
That was co-opted by the neoliberal institution, right? And so
Amen.
And so in said program, you were told not to do your art, hashtag trauma. But I'm true. Like, oh, yeah. I specifically remember that you were directly shamed for it.
Yes. Yeah.
I think it was because it was through your organizing, right? It was your organizing and your organizing is what, where your art really started to shine.
So yeah, maybe
that's why I, at least that's how I remember it.
Yeah, it was interesting too. Thank you for remembering for me. Because I, I remember how hard it was for sure. I remember the meetings that I was brought into. I don't know what the statute of limitations is or the NDA that I signed, but I'm kidding.
I was like, wait, what?
80% of what I talk about is a joke, and there's truth in the joke. I remember having had meetings where people were saying, like, we want to, it was always veiled, at least by administrators, as me graduating on time, like making sure that I was graduating on time. So there was like that overarching thing that was happening where it was like, I was told, oh, like if you do all these other things, i.e. art or organizing, your time to degree will not be good and you'll have to take longer. And then, you know, and if you don't know, if you're listening, when you take too long to graduate at certain institutions, they cut your funding. Mm-hmm. They're like, hey, girl, like it's been 10 years, wrap it up, you know? And I was nowhere near there. Like I was doing great. I was pretty much on time for everything. Actually, considering all that I've been through, I'm very surprised I didn't take longer. But I was doing great timing wise. And so getting that feedback was really weird. But the other part of it is like, yeah, I mean, it was faculty who felt like, you know, I wasn't doing as good in my classes. There was a little bit of jealousy there too, I'm sure, like envy when my art started to get some attention. I don't know. I mean, it was a little bit of a shitstorm, to be honest.
And I do want to just say, right, for I'm like, we're all out here airing dirty laundry, but also it's like,
it's been in the sun for a long time.
It has. And I will say, right, like, we have a very unique experience of, like, this all happened because we were part of the first group of students who went into this program, right? And so
definitely,
it was very clear that, especially the folks who came in like 3, 4, 5 years after us and so on and so forth, had very different experiences that were not as traumatic. I'm sure, folks had traumatic experiences because grad school, you can't, you know.
Yeah, it's hard on its own. School
without trauma, at least as a person of color, right? I'm like, what Kool-Aid you sipping on?
We share all this to say that, like, you may see us at this part of our journey, you know, PhDs in hand, cool jobs in hand, at least mine's temporary, but I like my job now. People like you who've seen the entire journey know that it was not easy, right? And that
nobody was trying to claim you back then.
And they still aren't, you know? And I'm okay with that. I think one of the biggest lessons of, like, going from being so afraid of being myself when I was younger, and now, not that I have it figured out, I'm actually just one step ahead a little bit through lots of hard work, is that people will have things to say no matter who you are. Like, I could have been the most boring, least nerdy, least artistic person ever, and people would have still had a problem with that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think when people are being themselves and enjoying what they do, it attracts certain evil eye.
I mean, envidia, like, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I wish it hadn't been so intense and strong, but it taught me that, like, I don't need to be afraid of being seen. And I'm unlearning a lot of that now. Like, you know, it's really hard. It's still really hard for me to feel safe being seen.
That is,
for a long time, it wasn't.
Yeah, that is really powerful. And I think that's something that can, I mean, I very much resonate with, because, like you were saying, right? Like, sure, I took like 2 years, right, between undergrad and grad school. So I had a little bit of time, but, you know, a lot of your 20s is still like figuring shit out. It feels like a shit storm in all parts of life. So then to embark on this really tedious, intense, you know,
with no instruction manual. I mean, you and I don't have, we didn't have at the time family members who'd been through
the
PhD program. So I couldn't call up somebody and be like, hey, like, how do you write a paper? Like, how do you
navigate? Just like the politics, because there's so much unwritten. There's the hidden curriculum, right? There's so much hidden curriculum that is like not written in books. I think there are books starting to come out, right? Like, I know there's like that book recently came out from Duke University Press on like for Latinx students who want to go, is like grad school for me, right? And then there's another one, I think, from UC Press, that's from Yvette.
Amazing. So there's two amazing resources.
Yeah. Now. So shout out to people doing work, because I think that work is really important. It's kind of like the work we've been doing very, very informally here in terms
More the better.
Talking about, you know, what it is like to navigate those things. But then again, right, to think about what age you're doing that at, right? And to be in your early 20s when you're again, your frontal cortex is still developing.
You know, now that we're reflecting on this, like, we had no business dating at that time in our lives. Like, we had no business spending the kind of money we were spending now that we have loans.
Or a Foot Locker. No, but I hear what you're saying in the sense of, like, so much of my 20s and my time in grad school was how can I not be seen? How can I not ruffle feathers? How can I make myself as small as possible?
Yes.
To to just get out unscathed. I was already very used to dealing with trauma and violence emotionally, spiritually.
Yeah, and you know, like we unfortunately had a higher tolerance for it, which is why, you know, I'm sure when I tell stories about my time in grad school to people, they're shocked and appalled and scandalized. I'm like, what? I even told you the worst one, you know, and it's horrible that that has to be the case, but.
Because it's like, you want to hear about my childhood?
Right.
Like, that's like, you know, that takes the cake.
Shout out to my dad. So yeah, I think like we're, you know, as open as we can on this podcast for the purpose of understanding that, like, even if you see a beautiful work title career at the end of this, like there's so much that happens before and during and after that, like, I don't want y'all to get it twisted. I have imposter syndrome every single day, wake up with her next to me all the time. And, you know, people are still playing chess out here. Mm-hmm. People are still navigating. I'm navigating really complicated power dynamics all the time. It's just a different place, but like, you know, you're right. Like when your formative years literally are shaped by making yourself small, even this podcast, like I remember when we started getting attention during like, you know, I don't even know the early years of it. Like I felt really like weird about it. And I've always had a weird relationship to attention as a middle child.
But whereas I'm trying to as the youngest child. It's conflicting because I'm like, I love attention, but I'm also dealt with so much self-confidence issues or self-esteem issues, right? And like, and was, that's why I think what you're saying is like this idea of like being seen or even being comfortable. I think so much of it is like, I wasn't comfortable with who I was. And then the world was also telling me, make yourself small. And don't take up space because that's what's going to say, like, that's what helped keep me safe, right? Like, is to make myself small, not to take up, like, not to put myself out there in ways that was not, that were not very, like, intentional or you know, playing the game, right? Like, but I think where I'm at now is like, and what my life is really pushing me towards is like, I need to be not only be comfortable with myself, but that's now what is going to allow me to survive, right? Is that, is like really leaning into who am I, and being proud of that or being comfortable with that and being confident with that. And I think that for so long in my 20s, in grad school, it doesn't even matter if I would have been in grad school. I could have gone to a whole different career or, you know, not even gone to grad school and just done a different kind of professional trajectory or whatever. And I think at the end of the day, the experience would be similar because I'm still Jack and I had these demons to kind of like deal with and these insecurities and, you know, I really do think looking back, right? Like, I think there was just so much trauma from childhood, from being in predominantly white spaces since middle school through all of my schooling after that, that really made me feel so small and insignificant that like so much of the last couple of years has been just like, putting myself back together, even realizing that, you know, or not realizing, but coming into my transness, coming into my neurodivergence, realizing that that's what was happening, which makes so much sense too, right? In terms of, my ADHD, my neurodivergence allowed me to also, it saved me in the childhood that I had, right? I had to disassociate. I had to live in what I was living in, and my brain helped me to like be in other places, right? In terms of my focus. I'm like, it makes so much sense, right? I am over here like a trapo sucio. I've just been, life has dragged me
Not a traposo.
But I'm also doing really well, right? Like,
yes.
So I think the point I'm trying to make is this trapo sucio is like, I feel very loved and cared for. I'm so protected by my brain and my body that really, you know, did whatever I had to do to get through, you know, the first traumatic 20 years of my life, then the next chapter of like my 20s and grad school and getting, you know, being really hyper fixated on getting this degree and getting something that also pushed me so hard towards the PhD, I'll be really honest, is like, because I didn't see a life outside of work for myself for a long time.
Right? Wow.
So I think that's also been something that I've really been working through. So much of my own internal beliefs were that I was just going to be alone for the rest of my life, right? And so, so that is why work was something I threw myself into and why it always took priority in my life. And it allowed me, you know, to get me to where I'm at. But I think what I'm trying to do now is to like, is really have, I'm having these conversations with myself of like, but what do I want my life to look like? That includes my career, but what do I want my life to look like? We have, like, life is such a precious and also short thing. And like, I've spent so much of that life being afraid, living in fear, living, experiencing, you know, experiencing hard things, but also, also work so hard, right, with the resources that I've been privileged with to also heal, right, and go to therapy, get on the medication that I need, like go through my transition at a later age, and like build really beautiful friendships like the one with you and like other folks, to just like, like life is more than just fucking work, right?
That's true.
To say that now that I'm in a place of like, you know, some security that not a lot of people, at least in academia, get to experience. But I feel very fortunate, right, that I am where I am, but also I get to do it on my own terms.
It's really cool to hear you share that. Thank you. It's the unsexy work, you know, and the work that I think, like, what do you do when there's no trophies in it for you? You know, like, I think a lot of what we pursue is for others and not ourselves. Like, I don't know. I agree with you. I think for me, at least, like what I've come to learn is like, I need to stop being afraid to be seen trying. There's a lot of perfectionism that we both have to undo, and we are working on our own because we have a lot in common. We talk about this all the time, is that like, not only through this podcast have we learned that, but like through ourselves, like, we both have this perfectionism demon, sleep demon. And it's really interesting because for you, I can totally see how it manifested into workaholism and like really getting into work and feeling validated by that, but also very like not loved by that.
Really? Because academia is not the place to be validated or to seek love. And it's just like, girl, wrong place to be looking for affirmation.
We were too young, maybe. I don't know why we felt that, but maybe somebody younger will hear it now and kind of get to that sooner than we did, you know.
I mean, it's also like, but again, we didn't know anybody in my, you know, as a kid I was just like, I was good at school, so then I just that's where I got my positive reinforcement. That's where I got my flowers until
Same. I was the little immigrant train that could, you know?
Yeah.
It was great. Yeah. It was great. And it was also very like, it was a road that would eventually end, you know, it had to. The track was not built all the way anyway. But I've become more and more aware that like so much of my perfectionism could be cured by me just trying and being okay with being seen trying. So,
and with failure, or like quote unquote failure, right? Which is just an opportunity to like try again.
Yeah. Yeah. And that it's never really, I mean, I don't know about you, but like my new motto is like, who cares? Nobody really cares.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's really trying their hardest. I hope that's not up to me to decide. What I can control is how hard I try. And I'm doing an okay job. I'm actually pretty capable. I feel pretty okay with what I'm doing. And if what I put out there is not good enough, then there's got to be other factors too, not just me, you know. And grad school was a big part of ourselves, and our degrees are a part of who we are, but they're not, I hope they're not everything we have to offer to the world, right? Which speaks to what you're saying. It's like, let's build out other parts of our lives. Let's build up our friendships. Mm. Let's build up our homes. Mm-hmm. Let's make gardens elsewhere. Like, we don't have to just invest all of our time in one corner of our lives that we've felt very comfortable being in. And I say that to myself, but also I hope I internalize it.
Yeah. And yeah, I think this is a perfect place to kind of end our conversation mm-hmm. today, and to also kind of put our intention, right, that we're going to come back to this, not in a year, but sooner than later.
See y'all in 2025.
But we are also going to try to do our best to come back, and because it's really a beautiful space for us, and yeah. Really to be here and to revisit and ceasefire.
Yes, 100%. It's been Free Palestine. I'm not new to this. I'm true to this.
Exactly. We've been here having this conversation. So
thank you, friend, for your time. And I love this. So we'll keep it going as long as we can.
Amazing. Bye, everybody.
Bye.